You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. And you just listened to Hot Texas Swing Band, and our friend Alex Dormont.
We are so happy that you're joining us again this week, whether you're listening live or you're catching this on the podcast. You may, if you're watching, you may have noticed a new logo on the screen as our opening music played, and behind us is our current logo. We are in the exciting time of changing some things over, and we are working with Blue Cottage Agency. They're a new sponsor. They created a new logo. Oh my goodness, there's amazing things happening out on Facebook and Instagram, and if you follow us on those pages, you'll get to see trailers and reels and all kinds of exciting things. And if you missed any of our shows, or you would like to share a show with a friend, remember that you can hear all of our interviews all the way back to show number one up on our favorite podcast channel like Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and just search for Rendezvous with a Writer, and always at latalkradio.com.
All right.
Hey, who's our special guest tonight?
We do have a guest, don't we?
We do have a guest. She's standing by, and we're excited to be bringing on Ann Schroeder. Ann, come and join us. There she is. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're excited to have you. Where are you joining us from tonight?
I'm in Grants Pass, Oregon.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fast. All right.
And you were sharing a story a little bit earlier with us, technology and the way of the world. Tell us about internet and squirrels.
Well, I live out in the country, and unfortunately we don't have cable. We don't have a lot of things. My cable is a cord that goes up the tallest Doug fir tree on our property and connects with the radio tower on Onion Mountain. And we've been here for 12 years, and twice our cable has been broken when a squirrel chewed the cable.
That's a great story. I hope you'll blog about that or write a story about that, Ann. What a great story.
What's up with those squirrels tonight?
Well, we also just say that just in case something, everybody listening and watching will have some idea of what's going on in that tree. Ann is the author of two books we'll be talking about tonight. The first one just released, Crossroads in Casa Corte. Congratulations, Ann. This just came out in May, right? Just this month.
May 7th, yes.
May 7th. So very exciting. We're going to talk about this one in depth. And the other book has just been awarded a Spur Award finalist, The That's Bundling cool. Year. Yeah. And this was released in December 23? When
yes.
was this one? Yeah.
Yes.
And December. This is mm-hmm. the first of a series, yes?
Yes.
What's the name of the series?
It's called The Field of Dreams, and it's three books, and it follows my Oregon college student into Amish Ohio, and it kind of basically the story of kind of my parents' story. So
yeah. It's a wonderful read. We will, I think we'll have time to talk about it a little bit more later in the show. Jim has a bio I think you're going to read.
I think I am.
All right. So here's a little something about Anne.
Anne Schroeder's love of the West was fueled by stories of bandits and hangings. Her great grandfather and his neighbors working together to blast a Norwegian grate out of solid rock of Indian caves and women who made their own way. Anne has served as president of Women Writing the West. She is a member of the Western Writers of America and Native Daughters of the Golden West. Her work has been honored with several awards, including a Spur Finalist, Will Rogers Medallion Award, and Laura Short Fiction Award. She currently lives in Southern Oregon with her husband, a yellow Labrador, and a lot of free-range chickens.
And some squirrels.
And some squirrels now, yeah.
Well, welcome, Anne.
I wanted to say, Bobby and I were going over your bio last night, and it was that, well, was there a typo here? We're missing a couple of words. And I'm thinking, blast Norwegian grade, and what is that? So I looked it up.
Norwegian grade.
They built a downhill road down there in Southern California to get the products down to the ships.
Yeah, tell us about that. Was something that's in your family history.
Yeah. Yes, and I wrote a book called Norske Fields about that. And my great grandfather and four of his friends came from Norway to Southern California and started what was later known as the Norwegian colony. And the county gave them $60 worth of dynamite, and they worked together to blast the grade. By themselves.
And that
my grandfather was six when he
was six. Wow. And that colony in Southern California, what's its name now? Does it have a different name?
Well, no, it's the outsiders called it the Norwegian colony. They were just, they were just foreign speaking Norwegian families. And it's now, on Olson Road, that was my grandfather, Olson, and it's where Cal Lutheran University is now. The Norwegians donated part of their land to the university there, Cal Lutheran.
Is that in
And they just had a Scandinavian.
Yeah.
In Thousand Oaks, yes.
Thousand Oaks,
they just had a Scandinavian.
Yes, so to all of our LA Talk listeners in the Los Angeles area, you will know Thousand Oaks.
That's true. That's true.
They had a Scandinavian festival there last week.
Yes. We've been to that.
We have
been to that. I got it. Oh, my gosh. I got it. Did you have a question for Anne?
Just how long did it take to build that road?
Well, it took a decade because... it took a decade because they worked on it off season and at night. And then some of the Norwegians died, and it took about a decade.
So, Anne, we'll move off the bio. Is there something not in the bio that you would like to tell us about yourself?
Well, I grew up without a television. I didn't have television until I was 28. And I think I just learned to view the world. I just lived in the world. I graduated from Cal Poly with a husband and a baby, and just kind of realized if I was going to get it done, I was going to have to do it myself. So I started, I love writing about the West, about women in the West.
Well, I looked at the internet today, and I saw that you had graduated from Cal Poly. That's a nice area up there. But I also noticed that it looks like you worked your way through school. No student loans for you.
I didn't know I could apply. I mean, when you're the my little high school had 14 in the graduating class, and we had no counselor, and certainly no one ever talked to me about loans or grants.
Yeah. You said something remarkable to me the other day. We did have an opportunity to chat earlier this week, and I don't remember the question I asked. We were just getting to know each other, and you said, oh, life is great in the 70s. And my first thought was, yeah, 1970s, yeah, they were pretty good. But you went on to talk about, I bet you had a different meaning. And I would love you to share, if you would, a little bit about life in the 70s.
That would be my 70s, not the 70s. I feel empowered. I am energetic. I have written five books in my 70s. I cook. I'm the vice president of the St. Vincent de Paul Soup Kitchen, and I cook there sometimes 4 days a week.
Wow.
I'm having a good time, and it's a time to give back. I teach writing. I mentor young people. It's the time to be the crone around the campfire and to give of our knowledge. And I think we have to look for opportunities to do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I teach writing classes. And
I just love that you said that. And your writing really has encompassed so much of your life's experiences. Let's talk a little bit about Crossroads and Casa Corte. This to me, being the first book that we are reading by you, and then we got into the bundling year, but this book to me felt like this is an other kind of worldly book. And I mean, it's breaking genre. It's the language is so poetic and descriptive, and every word counts. There's nothing flowery in your writing. And you take us into a night with some gentlemen, if you want to call them that, in a cantina. There's seven of them and the owner. So we have eight gentlemen there. And you craft stories, each one sharing a story that are really memorable and remarkable, and I found it to be a very compelling story. Tell us a little bit about what inspired this book and kind of how you got it going.
Well, when I was in my probably 40s, I just started writing short stories. I was doing a little bit character vignettes, and I would take them to my critique group, and there were a lot of ladies in their 70s and early 80s, and they weren't necessarily writing, but they worked on my stories. And I just, I remember each one came from an era of my life. The characters were, some of them, one was a writer that I knew who'd been married four times, and he always felt like women were the source of his problem. And I found that fascinating. And I just started writing character vignettes. And one day I remember I was out gardening, and I realized I could work them all into a novel. And it was such an aha moment, because they were good, and they had been critiqued and reviewed, and I'd gone over them and over them, and putting them in was a matter of like cutting and pasting into a hole. And, you know, I loved every one of those characters. One of them came from reading Willa Cather's Death Comes to the Archbishop. And I was so inspired by that, I went and wrote my own version, and he became the padre in the book. Yeah. But I had no intentions of writing a novel.
Well, you may not notice that Jim has on Jim is always our fashionista, and he's modeling tonight a shirt with Day of the Dead skulls on it.
And so are you.
And I also have a shirt with dancing Day of the Dead figures. And we chose that because when does this story take place?
Well, you know, when I first wrote it, it kind of took place somewhere vaguely between 1995 and 2005, because when I wrote it, was a few years ago, you know, and at that time I had all the time set up to be like 1995.
Right.
But here we are, just bringing it out. So, it's a timeless piece, and I don't think the date really mattered.
It is timeless, and there is this one night. They have flashbacks, and so we know there's other, but this one is all contained in Escobal's cantina, and there is a storm up in the mountains, which is potentially causing some flooding, which could be a problem. And it's the night before the Day of the Dead. So there is some expectation about what might happen tomorrow, because Day of the Dead is always a day of celebration. But it was very interesting to us that you would decide, you know, that you would choose the particular night of the year to have the action happen. Why did you choose the night before the Day of the Dead?
Well, I thought in many ways this was a book, a morality tale. And it was a book about the tensions of life and death and good and bad and men and women and paths not taken. And it seemed like everything, there were alternatives. And the whole book is a clash of the tensions. And, you know, even when strangers come into a cantina at night and drink, alcohol is involved. I mean, there's a potential for war. And I found that a fascinating backdrop for working through to find our commonalities.
Yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And so...
Go ahead, Ann. I'm sorry, we cut you off.
I think the Mexicans have a wonderful reference about life and death and celebrating their love for their departed. And I just thought that was kind of part of what I was trying to say was, let's just all get along.
Yeah,
Well, it's an interesting setting here. We got this little decrepit bar. It's really a cantina out in the middle of nowhere, dusty and dry Mexico, someplace where I'm not sure where I was. And you know what, we talked the other night about this place, and of course we see bars before. I've seen bars before, and I can't. It's easy for me to picture the combatants inside the bar, but I asked you a question. I said, well, were you at this bar?
Yeah, were you ever at this bar?
And you know, the funny thing is, I never had a drink of alcohol till I was 40. I was never in a bar. I just didn't. But one day I picked up published in 1965. It was a sunset book about Mexico, and I just looked through the pictures, and you know, I as I told you the other day, I feel like Jane Austen, the Bronte sisters, they never left their villages, and they were able to encompass humanity because they thought about it, and in some ways their books were their unfulfilled dreams and passions. And I think this was my passion book. I mean, this was the road I didn't take. And I think as a writer, one of our skills is that we're able to look back and observe other people who are on their different roads and take from them what we need to. And I think that's what I did.
Go ahead, Ann.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say, I think you did a very nice job of cutting those characters out.
Oh, yeah, the characters.
each one of them being an individual. And
we're going to get to them in a little.
Yeah, they're in this. They all end up in this place, you know. Some of them live in the town, but some of them don't.
Some
they're
of them
just
don't.
Kind of passing through,
right.
Like in the old West. And it's interesting how they react. Interact with each other, so it's.
But you know, one of the things that author Ann does is you described the town a moment ago, and we meet the town as readers pretty much the way you describe it. But as the book progresses and other characters enter, and we learn about others, this town is a tourist destination. There's a very famous artisan, a Mata Ortiz Potter, that people come from all over the world to see, and we meet him. And it's not really as dusty and desolate a town. So she, you have this gift, Anne, of taking us along. And there were times when I was like, now why did she do that? Why I thought was going to go this way, and oh no, it's going that way. Or now, what is that character's name? He's just the blonde. Is he ever going to have a name? And those things make it a little bit of a, it's not a mystery, but a little bit of a, well, there is kind of a little bit of a mystery.
No, there is.
Yeah, there is. But so that also makes it for a reader a very sort of joyful and playful read, because we are uncovering things that we didn't expect to. And there's a funny scene, and I know that you'll know what I'm talking about, because there's only one that's hysterical, and I could just see it on screen. And it's our main character, Escobal, and he looks up at that wagon wheel chandelier, and what happens, Anne? It's hysterical.
Well, he you know, that was the turning point. I mean, you have to have a reason why your character is receptive to change. And so I wanted to create a scene where this was the low point of his life. So he hops on the chair and he's going to swat a fly. And the fly lands and he jumps up and he swats and it buzzes and buzzes near his nose, and he swats at it and loses his balance. And because I needed whatever happened to him, I needed it to just deflate him. You know, he had to realize at that moment, whatever he was doing wasn't working for him. And, you know, we use that phrase, how's that working for you? And that was my phrase to him.
Yeah, and he gets a little humility there.
Well,
he does.
I would say it's interesting how we transgress in our thinking here. He starts out a routine job, then he realizes, wait a minute, my wife was supposed to have done that. Now he's getting a little irritated. You know, he loves his wife, but he's thinking, I'm not supposed to do this job.
And then
he gets interrupted by the fly. And the fly takes him down a rabbit hole like you can't believe.
Oh, it's just great writing. And it's just, you can just see it. We are going to stop right here for just a minute, Anne. We want to let our listeners and our watchers know one of the places that they can find your books, which is the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. We're going to see a moment about that. Don't go away. When we come back, more on Crossroads in Casa Corte. Don't go away.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer, with special guest Ann Schroeder, and we're talking about Casa Corte.
Let's get it right. Crossroads. Casa Corte. Sorry, Zay. Every now and again, Anne, we just get our tongues twisted. I have a question. We've been talking about this book. We're going to get into it in a little bit more depth. I was very interested as a reader, again, every chapter begins with the word, kind of like a heading, corte, and then a definition, cut down, interrupt. That happens to be chapter 5. And you do that for every chapter. What inspired you to do that, and how did you craft the chapter? Is it how does it relate to the chapter, I guess, is my question.
Well, I don't speak Spanish well. I had my high school years, my college years, but I had my old high school Spanish dictionary, and I looked up the word corte, and I saw this big description, all these words describing corte. And it just intrigued me, especially when I looked in later volumes and those same descriptions weren't there. And I thought, because I was kind of setting it in in the 1965-ish era, I was so intrigued. And I think that by putting those definitions, or I wrote an Oregon Trail journal and I used a woman's journal's entries, it adds another depth of sophistication or of background, and it draws you in and it makes it look more authentic. Mm-hmm. And I found all these definitions for corte and I just used them. And I think it was I used them as a foreshadowing of what was coming in each chapter.
Yeah. And as a reader, again, I liked that because I would read that and sort of would set me up, and then I'd get into the chapter. And then I would go back and go, okay, so now what? This is what happened in this chapter that relates to that. Very good for the reader experience.
No, and it all comes to because the author has to trust and respect the reader and make it a fun experience for them. And everything I can do to make it more difficult and more fun for the reader is what I will do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that.
Did you have? I know you had something to say.
I did.
I'm sure you have something to say.
Why don't you touch on the storyline a little bit? Just before we get in and talk about the characters, how do they all come together, and what's the idea there?
Jim is just asking how do all of those characters get there, and then sort of how does the plot, how does the storyline unfold without doing spoiler alerts, of course.
Okay. Well, they're all there in Casa Corte at the cantina with a lot of other people, and a storm is brewing, and there's a flash flood coming, and they can't leave. So they're going to be spending the night there. And some Americans, rich Americans with their money, and locals. And it's just a mismatch of people who wouldn't ordinarily be friends in any other circumstance. And, I think the last stop in Yuma County is a movie that's kind of playing with that idea right now. Stagecoach. I mean, it's an effective cinematic, tool. And yeah. I thought, well, why not? I mean,
so we're going to kind of call out some names, and we just like you to give us a little something about that character. And we'll start with Escobel. He Escobel Martinez. We just talked about him with the fly, and we know that it's his cantina. But why don't you give us a little bit more on Escobel?
He married young. He's He's tall and was good looking and American, and he married a small, humble Indian woman, and he's always felt superior. And he's never really thought of his wife as a gift to him. He's always been the gift to her.
Mm-hmm.
And this night, maybe he has to rethink that.
Mm-hmm. And he has a memory of a first love, doesn't he? That he likes to share. We get to experience it. He doesn't really share it, but we get to experience it. You want to ask about the villain? The villain. Oh my goodness, is such a nasty man.
Nobody likes Mendoza.
She knows how to write a villain.
No. Well, you know, your villain, he's got to be bad, but he has to have a redeeming quality. And I patterned him after a man I knew growing up as a young child who was a terrifying neighbor. He was Cajun, and he had PTSD from World War II, and he raised fighting cocks. And I would go and visit his daughter, and we would water the fighting cocks, these mean little birds tied up with their leg tied to a string. And I just went with it.
Yeah.
I think I took my childhood imagination.
He gifted to Esquivel a photo of Pancho Villa, I think, didn't he? The picture of Pancho Villa on the wall. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very interesting. That there is a picture on the wall, and it kind of plays a bit of a role. There's references in the story to Pancho Villa. Is there anything you'd like to enlarge on that or say about that?
In my research, there apparently is a real picture of that somewhere in a bar in Mexico. It was a metaphor, and I think when you're writing, details should matter. Each detail should carry its own weight, and it was important that that one did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to let people read the book to see why.
Yeah. That's fair. Okay, you want to call out a character name? Who do you want to have or talk about next?
Let's talk about Juanita.
Juanita.
Since we're talking about his wife?
Yes, Juanita.
I think Juanita and Conchita, the little whore that worked in upstairs, I think they were like the yin and the yang of womanhood. I mean, so often in Westerns, especially I think men writers in the past have portrayed, you know, you had the ranch wife, the little whore, and the spinster school teacher. And I think women of the West are so much more complex. And I just wanted to play with their complexities, that the good Indian woman could be bad and the bad prostitute could be good,
mm-hmm.
and rich, and they could have, and then they could interact with each other without necessarily liking each other. That's why I did that.
Yeah. And there are some wonderful scenes with them. So, reader, again, you will look for those. who else?
The Padre.
The Padre, the priest. Yes.
The Padre. Like I said, I read Willa Cather's Death Comes to the Archbishop, and he just was a figment of my imagination. I wanted to be Willa. I wanted to write my Willa story. And two, I wasn't going to give, you know, I know the story about a Catholic priest that people might expect, and I wasn't going to do that. You know, it had to be something fresh and new and original.
And it is.
And it is.
It is.
Thank you.
It is.
You know, why don't we just ask this question? The storm kept everybody locked in the cantina, except for those that live close by. They can leave. So they were going to spend the night, probably the whole night, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, early evening, it's like Esteval feels he's got to do something to keep the party going, so to speak. So he comes up with an idea. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Well, he sees the tensions rising, yeah. And he's got the Americans who come in with their money and their charm, and the tension rises with especially with Mendoza. So he's kind of looking for something that they can share, that they can have in common. And so it's just an idea that pops in his head, a free drink for anyone who will tell a story of their first love, of that woman that still twists in their gut, is how he puts it. Mm-hmm. And he's just really hoping to take the men's minds off of, you know, their alcohol and their animosity, and bring it to a neutral. I mean, it's just the simplest of ideas, and it kind of, that idea becomes a character.
It sure does. And every one of these characters, of course, relates their story, and they almost become like monologues because they get so caught up in their story that the room just disappears. They just, each one in their own way, and they're so willing to go ahead and share really such private, personal information. Maybe it's easier because there's a lot of strangers. Some are strangers there. I really enjoyed Lazaro, the Mata Artis potter. His story's just wonderful. And I could just see his fingers again. Your descriptions are so very vivid. You want to take a moment to just talk about him?
He's an artist, and he works with smooth rocks and clay and water and those elements. And he brings those elements into his lovemaking, and he's very sensual and unselfconscious. And, you know, the world is his oyster, and he doesn't realize how much, especially Escoval, envies him, his ability to just be a sensual human being. And even Escoval, and I brought him in because I wanted Escoval to learn every lesson, you know, I think being a sensual lover is an important element, and how else is poor Escoval going to learn? In some ways, Lazaro, in some ways, this is a story about what every woman wishes her husband knew about women. I wrote the book.
And that is your question.
Well, that was
first. That was your question for Anne.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I noticed as reading, as we're getting the storyline describing your first love. And I thought, you know, because I asked you the other night when we talked, and I said, how can you see inside the head of a guy who is telling, you know, he's coming forth with the woman who is his first love, or his favorite woman, or one that got away? And how did you see it so clearly? Because, you know, I can see how a guy can think how another guy would respond. But for a woman to get that far inside a guy's head, I thought that was interesting. And you had an answer.
Yeah. Give me your answer again, man.
Well, I had a writer friend, and I asked him. I asked him about, do you have a woman who's still twisting your gut? And he told me, and one of the stories, the story that he told me, I used for the Americano because it was fascinating. And I think part of writing a book for men is to get into the man's head and to write it. And one of the hardest, most difficulties I had in writing this was how to eliminate absolutely everything that didn't need to be there. That was torture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, but it makes it, you know, you pick it up and think, oh, you know, we read some books of 400 pages and you go like, oh, easy read this week. We could actually read both of them because it's only 198 pages. And then you get into it and it's like, oh my gosh, I have to read that again. Oh, what did I just read? I got to read. Listen to this. I got to.
Yeah. A lot of people say about my books that they have to read every single word. And yeah. I think every word should have to earn its keep.
Yes. Yes. I know that we're okay on time, but I know that we want to take a few moments to talk about the bundling year. So is there anything on this book, Jim, that you would like to make sure that we, or anything, Anne, you want to share about Crossroads and Casa Corte that we didn't hit on?
No, I think it's a little gem that I hope women will read and hand to their husbands, because I think it could be a life changer. I think it's a point of conversation for couples.
And you, as a male reader, you enjoyed it.
Well, I have to say this to our listeners and readers out there. You know, there's some twists and turns in this book, mm-hmm. and there's some things we didn't tell you about.
Yeah.
And there's some dark stuff, and there are questions that will be unanswered. So you need to read it.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's all that, too. We're going to just take a moment, and we're still on the air and everything with us. This is a little moment where we just want to talk a little bit about the show in case there's anybody listening or watching that would like to come on the show. And how did we meet? How did you remind me how that all happened?
Well, I watched, I saw on Facebook that Candace Simer had been on your, and she posted a link, or you posted a link. Yeah. And I love Candace. She writes Norwegian fiction, as do I. And we kind of chase each other in a lot of the contests that we enter. And one of us wins one year, one of us wins the next year. So I just contacted you immediately and asked if I could be on. Yeah.
And it can be sometimes that simple. So if you are interested, and we then start some dialogue with you, we send you a sort of an application. So we just know what we need to know about you and you need to know about us, and we get that started. And just email me at Bobby with an I, Jean Bell at gmail.com. And then we want to take a moment.
If you want to be a sponsor, you can do the same thing.
Yeah, and we are so thrilled to be working with Blue Cottage Agency, and we thank them so much for their support. And they have just kind of come along as a sponsor, and they represent and promote books, writers, and the literary arts as a whole, and Clicks by Madison, creative design, graphics, and logos. And we just love working with the folks at Blue Cottage Agency. And so we really thank them for coming alongside of us. And again, if you watch our follow us on Facebook and Instagram, you'll just see an explosion of things that they're doing for us and our guests. It's really to help promote our guests' appearance. So, but if you're interested in being a sponsor, go ahead and also contact us at the same bobbyjeanbell@gmail.com. So we're going to switch gears now. I'm looking at our time. Oh, it's moving along very quickly. We're going to switch gears, and we're going to just talk for a moment about the bundling year. And again, congratulations on your 2024 SPUR Finalist Award. Will we see you in Tulsa? Will you be in Tulsa?
We will.
We look forward to actually, you know, having face-to-face one-on-one. How lovely. You want to talk just a little bit about this story, what inspired it, and also I'd love to know what bundling means.
Bundling is the Amish practice of, in the old days when they had no heating, and they would put a board in the bed between a couple who were courting, and then they could cover up, and mom and daddy are in the next room, and they could sit and visit and get to know each other because there were very few opportunities. And I just loved the concept, and no one had used that word. I was shocked. So
yeah,
I did.
This is a wonderful read, and I have been thoroughly enjoying it. We have a couple of main characters, Amanda Miller and Jakob Ruth. Do you want to say anything about, just a little something about both of them?
Amanda Miller is an Oregon college girl going to be a teacher, and she inherits her aunt, the family home in Amish, Ohio, with the proviso that she has to live there a year before she can sell it. And she gets there and it's in rundown condition. So she hires Jakob, who is the neighbor, the Amish neighbor, who's in his room spring. And just in the course of working together, they get to know each other, and they start visiting. And it too is a kind of a morality tale. I mean, I wanted to explore the topics of what's love and what's lust, what's God and what's religion, mm-hmm. what's compromisable, and what are those core values that might drive mm-hmm. you apart if you were to marry.
Yeah. So, it's a wonderful read. You always like to ask that question about characters. Do you want to ask it? Yeah, you like to ask that question.
Yeah. Do any of your characters ever surprise you? Or do you have total control on them?
They surprise me all the time. In Casa Corte, mm-hmm. Lazaro's choice of a wife just surprised me. I did not see that coming. Mm-hmm. And I know from writing is just like reading. You don't know what's going to happen on the next page. Your characters drive the action, and you may have a rough outline, but you don't know how they're going to react or what they're going to do. You really don't.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they're channeling you, and your fingers are just doing their bidding.
Yeah. Do you ever have a challenge with what some call writer's block? Do you ever deal with that?
Never. Well, when I do, I just go out and garden, and the ideas come to me, or I just sit back down and put in the time, and my fingers never have writer's block.
Yeah. How did you find Wolfpack Publishing?
I really enjoy working with them. They've been so supportive, and also the Christian CKN, the Christian imprint, which has brought out the Bundling Years series. They're just right there. They send you a royalty check every month, which is lovely. And they're always marketing. I'm always looking on Facebook and seeing something, a post about my books. And all I have to do is share. They do all the graphics. I've really enjoyed them.
How can listeners and watchers find you, Anne? Where do they go, and where do they go to get your books?
Well, of course, they can go to my publisher, wolfpackpublishing.com. And they can go to cknchristianpublishing.com. When their link may scoot you over to Amazon. Of course, they're available on Amazon. Your local bookstore, you can go in and order it there. You can order online through your indie bookstore. And of course, bookshop.org, which enter through your link.
They're
easy to find.
We thank you so much for being with us. Jim has a quote. I'm looking at time, honey. You have a quote? Yes.
We always like to take a couple quotes in the book if we can. And this is about, this is the cantina owner, Esabel, who we've been talking about. And he's talking about this knight. He says, the knight is untested, like the colt that has not been ridden enough to know what to expect from it. In an hour, he will have the measure of this room. He will know how the knight will fare. And he throws out the challenge. One thing I know about a man, he does not forget his first love. Every man carries a memory inside him. A free drink to any man who convinces me this is not true.
No free drinks that night.
And then we move on to one of our characters, Americano, actually, and he's describing his first love, or the woman who can't forget. She was everything, the kind of woman you dreamt about, fresh, the kind that comes with the night and is gone before your arms get their fill. She makes you see what a fine trap you were caught in, and you are ready to trade your whole life for a night with her. But when she sucked you in, and it's too late, she's gone. You wake up and realize it was just a cursed dream.
Crossroads.
And I read one from the outside I think might be apropos. This is from the Eagles song, Hotel California. We are all prisoners of our own devices.
And we look forward to seeing you in Tulsa. Our guest next week is Teresa H. Jensen. We'll be talking about her award-winning book, The Ways of Water. And, of course, it's the first Thursday of the month in June, and we'll be with Henry Park will be joining us as well. And thank you all for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Ann.
A final comment.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing, and we'll keep reading. See you next week.